Welcome tonight. Join me, please, in 1 Samuel chapter 25. As you're turning there, I hope you'll ponder this title, or at least puzzle over it. What in the world could this mean as you're turning to 1 Samuel 25? Welcome to all who gather in the name of the Lord. Let us offer him fit praise tonight and fit attention to his word. We're going to spend quite a bit of time just reading the text here, getting this story as we think about how in the world figs could enter into our thinking about the Bible and how the word quickly could enter in. Some of you, of course, have already made the connection. But let us see. I'm going to begin it's the story of Abigail mostly. So we're here at the end of verse 1. Then David rose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. And there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of this man was Nabal, and the name of his wife, Abigail. Now, we know this familiar distinction between them. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. Maybe tonight you'll learn to make a verb out of his name. To Nabal, it is not good. He was a Calebite. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, so David sent 10 young men. And he said to the young men, go up to Carmel and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus you shall greet him. Peace be to you, and peace be to your house, and peace be to all that you have. I hear that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm. And they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we have come on a feast day. Please give whatever you have at hand to your servants and to your son, David. Now, if I were reading this more cynically, it sounds like mafia protection money, right? You've got yourself a nice little sheep operation here. I'd hate to see something happen to it. But that's not exactly what it is, so unless we can read it a little more charitably than that for the moment. I'm in verse 9 now. When David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited. So they did exactly what David reported, and they even reported that we do this in his name, and then they wait. They don't have to wait long because Nabal's it right here. And Nabal answered David's servants, who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers? Oh, the proliferation of the my. He's Nabaling it. And give it to men who come from I do not know where. Who are these people? So David's young men turned away and came back and told him. This should remind you of other stories where the servants are involved, or representative ambassadors in a sense in between. And they report, and then David said, look at David's answer. Every man strap on his sword. In fact, he likes his answer so much. Or every man of them strapped on his sword. David also strapped on his sword 3 times, right after another. It's time to start the slicing and the poking because of this report. 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. So this seems to be a kind of David in his Robin Hood phase, right? And here he's expecting something, and he doesn't get it. And so it's sword strapping time. Not good. But then look at verse 14, and there you see it, the word. It's there. We always watch for it. We're good readers, but. And this is what you have to hope for. Come on, some of you guys, you've had your Nabal moments. And you're just glad that there's an Abigail there as well. One of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them." Which that word suggests, in my mind, going beyond the statements Nabal reported here, what Nabal said. "Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when we were in the fields as long as we went with them. They were a wall to us, both by night and by day, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. Now, therefore, know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him." It's not bad enough that he said these things himself, but he's not subject to approach by family, by help. He's Nabaling it. But let's read on, because now she takes over. "Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep already prepared and 5 seahs of parched grain and 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs." There they are. The figs have appeared. "And laid them on donkeys. And she said to her young men, 'Go on before me. Behold, I come after you. Don't wait for me. Go.' But she did not tell her husband Nabal. And as she rode on the donkey and came down under the cover of the mountains, behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. Now David had said, 'Surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David, and more also, if by morning I leave so much as 1 male of all who belong to him.'" So David's coming along mumbling with his sword strapped, murmuring, grumbling. And here comes Abigail, hidden by the mountain. When Abigail saw David, look at the response again. "She hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, 'On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant, let me, Abigail, speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow Nabal, for as his name, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is his game." No, that's not the way it reads. "Folly is with him." His name means fool, we're told here. "But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent." See, I wasn't there to protect them from the full Nabal experience. "And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living, in the care of the Lord your God, and the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling. And when the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel, My Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause or for my Lord working salvation for himself. And when the Lord has dealt well with my servant, then remember me, your servant. And David said to Abigail, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. The grumbling has stopped. Blessed be your discretion, and blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. For as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to me, truly by morning, there had not been left to Nabal so much as one male. He acknowledges that that would have happened. Then David received from her hand what she had brought him, and he said to her, go up in peace to your house. See, I have obeyed your voice, and I have granted your petition. And Abigail came to Nabal, and behold, he was holding a feast in his house, going on as if nothing had happened, like the feast of a king even. And Nabal's heart was very merry within him, for he was very drunk. So she told him nothing at all until the morning light. In the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal and he died. I want to call attention to that differentiation. There is a separate act here of his heart becoming a stone and then him dying. So, first, I have to thank you for your patience. You have endured a long reading. But I'm not through. I'm going to back up. We're going to run over it again and talk about it and look and see what we can pull out of this. But maybe we can pull the title out. If nothing else, I hope you'll walk with a quick step out of the room tonight. Figs, quickly. Hope you understand that much of the story is distilled here in those two words. Now, of course, figs is not all she brought, but they are there. Especially as it says cakes of figs. I'm not even sure what that is. But I have seen opened a box of raisins, and when you tear the box open, I know, why would I ever do that, but you end up having looking something like a brick, the raisins kind of stuck together. That's what I'm picturing, that figs could also be kind of in their stickiness and squishiness. You could shape them into cakes. That's what I'm guessing. I don't think it's a cake baked with figs in it. It's not a cousin of the fig Newton, I don't believe, but cakes of figs. Let's go and look. Let's think about some of the items we've just seen. First, David doesn't just send guys to say, go ask for food. He coaches them in what to say. See, this is not an idle task. It is, I think there's a ceremonial quality to it. That he has a reasonable expectation. I'm not here asking for protection money. I'm here, I'm sending a report of what has happened. And I'm making sure you know that this is a report offered in my name. And so what he's really expecting is reciprocity. You owe me because I have done you well. I have helped you in your work. There's been no cost. We're told that later. But it's important to see that this is an embassy of young, not as fancy as king talking to king, perhaps, but it has that ritual quality. You go and you say this, and then you say it's in my name. And that's exactly what they do, and then we're told they wait, expecting a response, a known response. This is not a mystery here. We know what do we want. We want stuff. And as they're concluding, that we hope that part of what they're told is say, is, may we find favor in your sight. You see, that is, it is recognizing that this is someone who's able to bestow something on us. But we are worthy of that favor because of the report we've told you, because of what you know about us. So you have reason to offer us something. We are not beggars. You see, this is early in the chapter. Then the report comes back, and with a threefold mention, every man strap on his sword. Come on. That's got to thrill the soul of every... Come on, some of you have your swords at home now, I'm sure, but at the... I have to confess, there's a large plastic sword in my home at this moment, a remnant of a grandson over. It's a fine one, too. I've resisted the urge so far to wield it, but it's there. And so here, this is someone used to the sword, and he's saying it's time for us to exercise the sword. And it seems pretty impulsive, because of the straight-up challenge offered by the rebuke. But notice, I'm reading now, back in verse 14, one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the..." You know, that's probably not the word like evangelist, but still, this is a messenger of the Lord. "Out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. Yet the young man knows the right answer. The one who speaks to Abigail, we know, everybody knows, it's Nabal who doesn't know. So one lesson, men, here, people used to being in charge, understand that you may not understand. They were a wall to us both by night and by day, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. You need to understand that, Abigail, says this young man, because of what's happening. And then we're told, let's go back and rehearse. It's a great list. See, I hope you understand the detail matters here. There's a quiz. There's this cataloging of stuff. I hope you appreciate with me the how important this is throughout the Bible. You don't just say, she took him presents. No, you've got to catalog it. You've got to list them. You've got to itemize. So look, 200 loaves, that's a lot. I don't know what these loaves look like. Whatever, there are 200 of them, quite a few. Two skins of wine seems a little small compared to 200 loaves. And then five sheep already prepared. Not just sheep, but sheep ready for the grill. And whatever that is, some measure, I don't know how big it is, but my guess is that we're not talking small bags here, of parched grain. And then the raisins. And lastly, 200 cakes of figs. Don't you know the donkeys were beginning to feel this burden? But for her, look what she's done, and she does it quickly. She made haste and got all of that together. She knows this is not time for planning. This is not time for talking. It's time for taking. Let's compare them now. This husband and wife and their responses to reports, right? David's servants report to Nabal, and one of Nabal's servants reports to Abigail, but the reports of the servants here. Nabal, you remember, he questions, who is David, the son of Jesse? Apparently that's either he already knew who David was, or included in the report from the messengers the connection with Jesse. So Nabal questions. I couldn't resist sticking this. He opines. He offers an opinion. But it sounds a lot more embarrassing when you opine than merely to voice an opinion. He questioned. He opined. And then we're told later that he railed, whatever that may be, just those two combined or something else. But the servant said he went off on him in the language, the way we say that, I think. That's what he does. Abigail, on the other hand, made haste. Took. Instructed. That's when she said, go ahead of me, don't wait. She hurried. Notice the, out of these four, three of them are references to speed. Three of them suggest the urgency at work here. You need to understand this is not for us to sit around and decide. This is not time to get out the Dr. Pepper and talk about it and decide what might be what is the exact proportion of response we need to offer in this, okay? No, get the figs and go. Right? Very different responses. And so maybe already, if nothing else happens that could prompt your thinking, think about this for yourselves. How much can I be like one or the other of these? And my guess is, we all can be Nabal. Some of you, people around you know, the Abigail sitting near you can tell you about your Nabal moment if you have any doubts. But we can also say we don't have to be like him, because we have avenues to escape. One is we have servants, or we have those in our presence who can help us, and we have Abigail around as well. The last one I mentioned here, after her speech, she hurried and she fell on her face before him. This is an act of worship, or obeisance here as she places herself prostrate before David. I want to come to the part that intrigues me as much as anything in the passage. And partly the intrigue grows by repetition. Three times within a fairly small span of verses, twice it is Abigail who says it, and then once I think is David himself. Yes. This language, saving and salvation, are brought in. I have to confess, I don't see this as a story of salvation. And so we need someone better able than I to address this. But we need this here. I want to wrestle with it. I want to see how in the world can this be about salvation. What it probably means is it's a somewhat different sense of salvation than we might think, but maybe not. Let's just puzzle. I'm going to go back and I want to read this part again. Let's go to verse 26, the first one of these. This is Abigail speaking. Now then, my Lord David, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. So you see, she is the one who introduces this language. First, she introduces the language of the Lord. This is not just about two men, touchy in their honor, touchy in their dignity, touchy in their pride, desiring, it's not pushy meeting touchy, who's going to be the number one stud in the neighborhood. It's not that, according to Abigail. She brings in God's name. She says, as the Lord lives, because the Lord has restrained you from saving with your own hand. So somehow, David's using his sword would be an act of him saving with his own hand. And so he's been saved from that act of saving. What could that be? And I'm wrestling here. We'll get to the second time and see if we can make more sense out of it. But the wrestling will probably continue. I read on here. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord David be given to the young men who follow my Lord David. Please forgive the trespass of your servant. That's Abigail speaking of herself, taking the guilt onto herself from Nabal. Folly is his game. For the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord. So you see what's happened here. It seems like Abigail has bridged a couple of things here. The second one helps me to think about that. What she has done is she's taken this particular instance, this encounter between Nabal and the messengers of David, and she's fitted into a larger framework, because she knows something else. Because she says this, she says, the Lord will make my Lord David a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord. See, this is not just about guarding some sheep. Abigail knows who David is. He is fighting the battles of the Lord, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. See? So, Abigail understands that this is God's man, and I have got to help God's man be saved from himself. You see, he's not strapping on the sword for God is one thing. Strapping on the sword for David is a different thing. And that seems to be what Abigail is aware of. And so this saving, we've got one more time to read through it. Let's keep going. I'm now in verse 29. If men rise up to pursue you and seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of the Lord your God. You see, she has two groups of people in her mind, those who are enemies of the Lord who are going to be flung out of the sling, and then those who are the partners of the Lord, and she clearly puts David in that camp, in that group. Reading on. And when the Lord has done to my Lord, see, there it is, the Lord God has done to my Lord David according to all the good he has spoken concerning you, and has appointed you prince over Israel. So you can piling on her understanding of how David fits into a larger picture. My Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord working salvation for himself. And when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember me. You see here in verse 31, we have another reference to Abigail understanding that David fits into the work of the Lord. And so she understands that I am responding to this instant, this incident, this occasion that I've been given. I make haste. I've got the figs and I'm on my way. But she knows that this moment is part of something bigger. And I hope we can keep that in mind as we think. It seemed to me this third time of working with salvation in his own hand. We're not talking about eternal salvation in that sense, the way we think about an individual being saved in that sense. I'm not discounting, but it just seems like in some ways there is a putting things to right. There is a restoring of a right order of things. When my servants went to Nabal, the right thing for him to do would have been to offer something to offer generously to my messengers. And when he didn't do that, he broke the order. He broke the accepted order of things. He broke the foundational relationship of reciprocity that afoot in that time and place. And so now David says, strap on your sword. We're going to put things back in order. And we're going to do it by smiting them with sword. You see, so in that, it may be wrong. Next week, it can be corrected. I'll do it if I need to. Jeff can clarify things. But it seems to me that this, we're going to restore order with the sword. And Abigail stops him, helps him to see that that's not the way you restore order in this moment. This is what you want to do, and it might be understandable you'd want to do that, but don't respond like Nabal in your pride, in your selfishness. There is something bigger going on, and that's what she sees. You, my Lord David, or the servant of the Lord, so let's act like it. We're back to Nabal. His heart died. This is a story. It's a narrative. His heart became a stone. I don't know what that means, but it's what we're told. And he lives on for 10 more days. I don't know what that means. Is it a coma? I don't know. But it's what we're told. His heart died within him, and about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. So there's that 10 days. I think that maybe I'm going to see in there, whether that's all that's intended, I don't know, but I'm going to see in there this intention to see the heart separated from the body in this way. The heart had died already. And that's, for many of us, we understand that the heart becomes so central. And so maybe another place to stop and say, I'm going to take this on the road with me. I'm going to remember. I'm going to test my own heart and see how do I stand in my Nabal moments. So let's now stop and see a few moments of understanding here. First, the servants had a clear understanding. There's an expectation of reciprocity. That word I've used here, that I gave you something, you give me something. There is an exchange. And I think that's probably pretty prominent in the culture of the time, but maybe in ours too, an understanding that we're in this together and you do something, we gotta do something. It's not a this for that. It's not exactly quid pro quo. When you get pretentious, you gotta go Latin, of course. No, but there is. So when God does something for us, for example, there may well be an expectation of reciprocity on God's part responding to us. Partly we see this, the servants understand the way things are working. They know it's not just this moment with Abigail. They have seen David's men all this time in the fields. And they understand, they know the story. It reminds you of Naaman's servant who understands what's going on. When Naaman gets caught up in his own pride, I could have washed myself in the river back home. Our rivers are better. The servants understand. Did he really say that's all it took? And Ruth, you remember, Ruth appears in the fields to glean. And the servants, Boaz asks, who is this person? And the servants know. They tell him. She came here to glean. She's been working and working and working with only a slight rest. We watched her. We know who she is. We know what she's done. Servants know. And they know that there's a connection between what you do and the outcomes expected. But of course, it's mostly Abigail's understanding that we want to take with us. We want to understand that there is urgency. And that takes a judgment call. Sometimes we have to wait. Patience is in order. Sometimes we have to be urgent. This makes us think of, in our therapeutic model, we talk about interventions. We're going to set someone down and confront them. And I'm not recommending therapeutic models, but at least in some way, Abigail understands that it's not time to talk. It's not time to proper feed up and Cheeto this thing. It's time to get the figs and go. There's an urgency. And she understands that it's important to take gifts. You know, that there was a, not uncommonly people, That was pretty common, I think, in times if you were a house guest to take gifts and offer to participate. We still know that today. We understand that there's a place. Sometimes it's only a gesture, but the gesture matters. Abigail understands that. So I expect some Fig Newtons being transferred around here sometime this next week. See a neighbor and hand them some Fig Newtons. No. Thirdly, increasingly important, of course, is Abigail understands this is not an isolated moment. And that may be something that I can take with me that I'm wrestling with right now. I want to see that I need to be able to see every little moment is part of something bigger. Well, this is actually a pretty big moment. But even though it seems like a big moment, I'm not going to succumb to the tyranny of this big moment. It is part of something bigger. And I need to talk about it in those larger terms. I need to call God into the story. I need to involve him in the story. And so I offer to you Abigail's understanding as a model for our own. See beyond the moment. Now, this is an exaggerated occasion with lots of people involved and swords and things, but you could see two men getting upset with one another somehow, and somebody's got to prove something. And you just have to hope that Abigail's present and she can put things into their proper framework. And then, of course, in relation to that, she sees David's need for protection from himself. And that's true for us in our own ways, too. However strong we might think we are, we finally rest in companionship with others. And let's just hope we have more Abigails than Nabals around. But we do remember that we could be either, and it's our job to see, to have some hope. Well, let's close up here. You're going to have a week coming that may bring lots of little things, nothing big at all, but there may be some bigger things for some of us, who knows. I hope you're ready. Because Nabal did not have to respond the way he did. He made a choice. He chose to Nabal it. He was sat there, was going to pronounce David, going to pronounce his questions, opine. There are lots of young men. That just sounds like some old guy. Lots of young men these days roam around thinking they're all that. So we have that choice. But we also have the choice to be like Abigail and bring figs quickly. I invite you tonight to recognize the fact that we both are possible for all of us. But do remember this, it's the servant and the wife who see best in this moment. Let's remember that no one has a monopoly on seeing rightly. We all benefit from someone looking for us. And I hope that as we leave here this week, we'll go forth ready to look well. All of us, I think, are involved in a story that involves God. Abigail understood it that way. If you've already brought God into your story, good. Keep him there. Let him be the featured role that he is. And your life will flourish. As we learned this morning, right? For good or ill, it is that rootedness in him that provides our opportunity for flourishing. It may be that you have not yet invited God into the story of your life. And then you may do a little better than Nabal, but you're still in his corner. And I hope you will answer the question, who is the Lord, differently. I hope you will say, there is one who has an answer for my problems. There is one who gives me life, or can give me life. And I hope you will invite yourself. You will offer your reciprocal response to God's offer. God's offered you the whole deal. God has offered you hope. And tonight, if you will stand up before us and say that you do indeed believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that you want to have a life in his name, and you want to begin that life by submitting to baptism for the remission of your sins, someone here will help dunk you. And you can come up out of that water with wet hair and a glad heart, because you have taken on the Lord's story and brought it into your own. Let us all renew our stories, but if there's someone who needs to begin a story with the Lord tonight, will you come now as we stand and as we sing?